Welcome to BI Talk, sharing ideas, information, and support.
Hi everyone, it's Jo, and I have with me today Dawn.
Hello.
And we've been joined by George Ferguson, who actually went to the same school as me, as it goes. Hi George, how are you doing?
Hi Jo, I'm good, thanks.
Hi George.
Fabulous. Hi Dawn.
So do you want to, I know there's a few things we're going to cover in this interview, but do you want to start off by telling us, because you've just quite recently had a job change, haven't you? So do you want to tell us a bit about that and what your role now involves?
Certainly, yes. My role now is Enablement Officer for Children and Young People, and I work for Henshaw Society for the Blind, which is predominantly a Manchester-based organisation or charity. But we're based in Liverpool, so I work from the Liverpool office. So I work with children and young people from the age of zero all the way through to 18 with youngsters with sight loss. So we organise various activities for children with sight loss in that area, in the Merseyside area. We look to host activity days that children from the age of naught up to 18 can attend. These can be fun days out, they can be visits to the zoo, they can be, you know, adventure days out, they can be rock climbing, those sort of things, physical activity days out. And we encourage the families of the youngsters to come along as well. So it becomes more of a fun activity day based event for all of the family. And the idea around having the family involved is for that continuity, really, so they can see how the children are coping with sight loss, how they can achieve and be more enabled to do things that possibly some of the parents don't think they're able to do. And we encourage the families to come along and you know, see that at first hand how they do that. We also deliver a course called I Can Do It, and the course is based around and the educational age children. So we'll go into either school settings or we'll host them at Henshaw Society in Liverpool, and we will look to run the course over a number of weeks or a number of days, depending on how we can facilitate that and, you know, the needs and wants of the group that we're working with. Ideally, we'd look for a minimum number of 6 youngsters, and we would be educating them around living skills, cooking skills, and anything around being more independent and helping them to become more confident. And the age range for that is from the age of 8 up to 18 as well.
Wow, excellent. What's going on?
There certainly is, yeah. We Manchester, as I say, is quite a large expanded area where the I Can Do It courses and the activities are run, and we have a number of staff doing that across the Manchester and Greater Manchester area. So when you look at it geographically, it's about twice the size of what Liverpool is, and that's why we look at more, you know, the Merseyside area. So we're trying to focus on that as well. So we try to work with the 5 boroughs across Merseyside. We work with the Century Services, and we try to work with the schools as well, predominantly in a mainstream setting where we can go in and identify where those visually impaired youngsters are. And we try and encourage them to attend the workshops, courses that we deliver and the activity days as well. And it also enables the families and the youngsters themselves to meet other families of visually impaired youngsters. We don't just have a closed off group, as in, if there are children who don't necessarily have sight loss, but there's parents with sight loss, we encourage that environment as well. So we have an equivalent to me who works at Henshaw's in Liverpool, and that's for adult services as well. We also have a rehab officer in Liverpool who work with either youngsters or adults as well. So, and obviously other sight loss charities like Bradbury Fields as well. And we work closely with visually impaired schools as well. And St. Vincent's being one of them, which is obviously where, as Jo said, we went many years ago.
Yeah, many. So that's great. So the days out and things, so you said like you get the families involved. So that presumably means that if a child with a visual impairment has a sighted sibling, that they can do the activity together, which is really nice, isn't it?
Yeah, and we really advocate that. We think it's really important to make sure that the siblings, you know, the brothers and sisters, the friends of the visually impaired youngsters are encouraged to come along as well. Sometimes there's a small charge for those days out, but we try to keep it as free and as cheap as possible. We encourage, as I say, the whole family to come along to share those experiences. And it really works, you know, the way it's being delivered over in Manchester and it's being delivered in Liverpool has been really successful over the years. Mm. And we're hoping that will continue. And we're just trying to raise more awareness of that, really, just so everybody out there knows what we've got to deliver. And it's the sort of thing that we can help support, you know, Century Services on as well, because they're looking to give the youngsters more opportunities outside of the school and education setting. Yeah. And this is perfect for that. And we'll actually go into those settings as well. You know, we will go into school settings and we'll deliver the courses and we'll also deliver outside those environments. So, you know, we're happy to do that. We'll work with partners in the city as well to identify where there's other visually impaired people or youngsters outside the school settings. One location is the Hive in the Wirral that we're hoping to partner up with. And we know there's a cohort of visually impaired youngsters over there. And if we can deliver, say, you know, we can deliver one of the courses over there, or we can help encourage those youngsters to come onto our activities and days out, you know, that would be fantastic. And working with partners, working with key stakeholders around the city and around Merseyside to ensure that we can, you know, identify where these youngsters are is key, really.
Mm. Have you got a calendar or itinerary for the days out as yet, or can you tell people what to expect on the days out and what trips you've got planned so far?
We haven't got anything in the diary at the moment. We are encouraging families and the youngsters to get in touch. We are going to be sending something out next week, actually, in the form of a newsletter to all of the families to say, these are the activities, these are the days out that we're looking to do, and these are the dates that we're thinking of. We normally would do it in school holidays, and we do it through the summer holidays, but we are keen to also do it over weekends, and if possible, when the weather gets better and the lighter nights come in of an evening as well, depending on what those activities are. Mm-hmm. But we're also thinking about the possibility of joining up a couple of activities. So we might, what one thing that we thought of was to introduce the children to opportunities that they may not have tried before, like visually impaired tennis. So we went down to the local tennis centre, took a group down there with the families, got them playing an introduction to tennis for visually impaired tennis, and then maybe taken over to the leisure centre where they'd try swimming as well, or go swimming with the families as well. And basically next door to each other, there's also a running track there in Wavertree, which is a venue that we're looking at. And then obviously I mentioned the Hive as well, so they've got great facilities over there as well, so we think there's opportunity to host things there as well. And you know, it's in an environment where there's other non-visually impaired youngsters as well, so mm-hmm. we also encourage that and to allow them to see how things are delivered to visually impaired youngsters. So nothing's in the diary as of yet, but we are looking to get something finalised by the end of this week and something sent out by the beginning of next week to the families. And we also encourage the families to join our Facebook group as well, which is a new group in Liverpool. Manchester have had one for a while, and we just introduced one a couple of months ago. In fact, we had our Christmas party at St. Vincent's for the youngsters and families just before Christmas, and we were encouraging. Yeah, it was really good, actually. It was a fantastic event, and we were encouraging the families then to come along and join our Facebook group as well. So that's one way of communicating with the families more directly, rather than sending emails and you know, sending letters out in the post. We see that as a better opportunity for them to engage with each other as well, which we feel is really important.
Yeah. So if somebody wants to find you on Facebook, what do they need to search for?
It's a good question. They would need to look at children and young people in Liverpool, the Henshaws children and young people in Liverpool. So if they go on Facebook and look for that, I'll give my contact details anyway when you're ready for me to do that, so they can also get in touch with me via via my email address and my contact number, I can get them connected to our Facebook. You have to be invited to the Facebook group because it is a closed group.
Right.
So people can go on there, they can request to join, and then they answer a couple of questions around, do you have a visually impaired youngster? If you're the parent of that youngster, ideally give us the name of that, and then we can see they're on our database. If we're not, we'll try and get them on there, and then we'll get them joined onto the Facebook group. So yeah, once I get my contact details, they can get in touch and get that.
Fabulous. And I guess your contact details for the newsletter as well, is that right? Yeah. To be signed up to the newsletter, yeah. Yes. So do you want to give us those now before we move on to everything else that you're into?
I certainly can. My email address for Henshaw's is George, so it's George.Ferguson, F-E-R-G-U-S-O-N, at Henshaw's, henshaws.org.uk. And the contact number, my mobile is 07970-637-687.
Fabulous, thank you.
Brilliant. So you were talking about, you're very involved obviously with getting kids active and everything, but you're a really active person yourself, aren't you? Involved with loads of sports. So and one of those is football. So do you want to tell us how you're involved with football and what that entails?
Well, I'm actually the development officer for the Partially Sighted Football League, and it's a national league for partially sighted adults 16 plus age group who go to various tournaments throughout the year around the country to compete against each other. The tournaments generally run between September and April. We also have an FA Disability Cup, which is run by the FA, and that's at St George's Park as well. So as well as it being at various locations around the country, i.e. Newcastle, London, Liverpool, Birmingham, we also have a number of teams from around the country as well who compete. So what we tend to do is we have one Saturday in the month, and all of the teams attend a venue and they all play against each other in their division, whether it be Division 1 or Division 2, and compete on the day. The game that we actually play is futsal, so it's indoor football. And it's a slightly different to five-a-side, where you're not playing against walls and stuff, you're actually playing two touchlines. So it's like a mini version of 11-a-side, really, but it's 5v5. And we play with partially-sighted outfield players and partially-sighted goalkeepers as well. There is also an international version of the game, which is run by the FA in England. So we have a blind team and a partially sighted team, and they compete in European and World Championships around the world. The blind setup also have a national league as well, and their tournaments are predominantly hosted at Hereford at the RNC College there, and they compete on a regular basis as well. I think the program's pretty much similar to ours from September to April as well.
That kind of fits in with the mainstream football league, doesn't it? You know, more or less. Yeah.
Yeah, and all our football for partially sighted is all indoors. So it's more conducive for the partially sighted players who don't have to then cope with the outdoor environments and different lighting, different weather and all that sort of stuff. And with the blind, they actually play outdoors because of the acoustics. It's better sound, better quality for them. And their pitch layout is slightly different to ours. They have boards down the side, so it helps keep the ball in play more often. And they can use that as rebound boards and things like that as well, but they don't use boards behind the goal, so it's like a touch line. So if the ball goes out, it's either a goal kick or a corner, similar to ours as well. And we use slightly different goals to five-a-side goals that we used to play. So we use like hockey version goals, so it's 3 metres by 2 metres. So it's, you can imagine what a hockey goal looks like. They're the type of goals that we use now.
Are the teams mixed, so male, female, or is it?
No, they are mixed. It's a good question, because there is no provision for visually impaired females to play, simply because there's not enough of them.
Not that I'm saying I'd want to play.
No, but
I'd be stuck outside because I'm blind. I'd be stuck outside, and that's not my idea of fun in January.
You mean you'd be running a bitch, Joe?
I know.
Yeah. It's typical, isn't it? The blind players have to go outside and the parcels are inside and they're warm. Yeah, so with special dispensation requests to the FA, they will endorse visually impaired or partially sighted females to play in our league. So, and until such a time when there's enough interest from partially sighted females and we could actually look to host a league for them or some sort of competition for them, they are allowed to play in our league, which is great in one way. Because the game that we play, futsal, you will find there's a little bit less contact than what you would find in generally 11-a-side and sometimes 5-a-side football. The emphasis is on skill, the emphasis is on more contact with the ball, the emphasis is on passing, more control. So there's less, I'm not saying there is no opportunity for people to tackle, there certainly is, and it's still quite a physical game. But the emphasis is on people's ability to play the game rather than, you know, to kick each other up in the air. So, and it's surprising that we do have some keen females that are willing to be involved in that. So it's, you know, that's fantastic, and it advocates that we, you know, football can be played by everyone and can actually be played on the same pitch by everyone. So it's a fantastic achievement from not just us but for the FA as well.
You never know, there might be some budding football players, female football players from VA Talk.
Well, you never know.
Well, hopefully, yes. Hopefully there is.
So more than welcome. If anyone wants to get involved with that or find out more information, how do they get in touch with you guys about that?
Okay, well, we have, similar to the cricket that I'm going to go on to in a sec, but we have a national committee as well, which I'm part of as a development officer. So it'd be best if people email me on psfldevelopment@hotmail.co.uk. Now, that email will be changing in the next week or two, unfortunately, because we're getting a new website built, and once that's up and running, we'll be having new emails in line with that. But that email address will still be up and running for quite a while, so we can still signpost people to it. And the contact number that people can get me on is my mobile, and it's 07577 709156.
Okay, fabulous. So, cricket. God, yeah, man classic. Of many talents, gosh.
Right.
Yeah, do you find time to sit down?
God, yeah. Well, no, because I'm busy playing football, cricket, and working as well. So I'm quite lucky where I'm still playing some of the games as well. So that's probably the reason why I do it, actually. So, yeah, cricket. I'm actually the Welfare and Safeguarding Director for Applying Cricket England and Wales, which is the only national league and the only provision for partially sighted and blind players to play cricket. Cricket differs slightly from the game of cricket that we probably all know as the mainstream version of the game, where they use a red cork ball or in the one-day stuff, a white one. We have 4 blind players in a team and 7 partially sighted players in a team. Now, the age range goes from 11 all the way up to open age and to, you know, to, until people can't play anymore, essentially. So it allows, because it's less of a contact sport like football is, it allows people to play on that same playing field. And we allow females and males to play. And obviously it's mixed with youngsters from the age 11 upwards as well. And we have a national league that competes all over the country. There's 20 plus teams around the country now. There's over 400 players playing cricket in England, which is fantastic. We also, so apart from the national league, we also have a development league, which is now called the regional league. So you have one for the north, have one for the south, you have one for the southeast, and one for the Midlands as well. And the way that works is teams that are new to the game and players that are new to the game would be part of that regional development league. So it allows them a bit of a leeway to try the game, get friendlies, play against other teams, but not necessarily in a highly competitive way. The emphasis is on people trying the game, getting used to it, getting used to batting, getting used to bowling, getting used to fielding, and the old, you know, the whole ethos of the game, really. And once they're ready and able and they're at a level where they can compete against national teams, we then look to introduce them to the National League, which is a lot more competitive. There's a lot more travelling involved. There's a few more stayovers because of the distances. So if you've got Northwest teams playing against teams in Brighton and Somerset and the likes, then obviously you have to stay over because it's not conducive to do all that travelling one day. So ideally, we'd expect people to be at that level then where they can not just afford it, but they can afford the time and you know, be at that level to compete against the national teams. So, yeah, we also host a festival for all regional development teams, which is generally held in September. So it's a whole weekend of cricket, and it's usually at Leicester University. And you're looking at 10 to 12 teams who arrive for that weekend, and they'll compete against each other over the weekend. And it's a fantastic celebration of visually impaired cricket. So it's a great opportunity for those teams to all come together and meet new friends and meet old friends from the year before and the likes, and to play cricket and have fun. So that is the key thing, really.
I know I had to go have a go day in Leeds a couple of years ago. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm glad you did, because you know it allows both females, it allows males, it allows youngsters, it allows the older people to all compete. There are slightly different rules for blind players compared to partially sighted players, and we also have a low partial status as well, depending on people's eyesight levels. And the way the rules differ slightly is a partially sighted player at the higher end would have one bounce when they're being bowled to, so they can hit the ball off one bounce. They catch on the full. Now, a blind player would have a one-bounce catch, so the ball bounces once and then they catch it and the player's out after the player's hit it with the bat. But when they're being bowled to, they get two bounces, so they can help distinguish where the ball's coming to them and how fast and so on. So it gives them a little bit more time to generally know where the ball's coming from and the pace as well. So they're the main differences. And we use a slightly bigger ball. We don't use a Corky size ball. At domestic level cricket, we use a size 3 football, and it has bearings
inside it. I know, I felt it.
Yeah, and there's also an international version of the game, which is used. We use a small ball, so it's a Corky size ball. It's a hard plastic ball, and it's got bearings inside, so it's really audible. It's played slightly different to the domestic version of that we play in this country. And I prefer the domestic game, because the other game, you tend to be lower down, you tend to be on your knees more trying to do sweep shots compared to standing up straight and playing so-called normal cricket, if you like. So my knees won't take the bending down as much and being on my knees as much that often, so because of my age. But yeah, that's why I enjoy the domestic game instead.
That's fab. So contact details for cricket as well. Is it yourself again, or is it?
I'm actually on the committee as the safeguarding officer. So the best person to contact for the, if you want to get involved with cricket anywhere around the country to find out where your nearest team is to liaise with a gentleman called John Garbutt, who's the development officer. And his email address is Garbutt. So it's garbett.j@sky.com, and John's mobile number is 07769 909 906.
Brilliant. Lots of opportunities there to get involved with.
It's perfect time of the year though to get people active, isn't it? People starting to think about getting active again and getting rid of a few pounds and all that. So
yeah, and those lighter nights coming in a little bit, aren't they? So yeah, it's really good. And for men and women as well, and children.
Yeah, you'll find a lot of the teams around the country now, even though it's winter, they'll probably be doing a lot more indoor training. So there's opportunities to try the game indoors, and it gives you an idea of what the game's all about and how much fun there is. And you know, it's all about meeting new friends, socialising in those circles, because there's big social sides to these activities as well. It's not just turn up, play, compete and go home. It's actually, there's a big social element to all of this, as there is in any form of activity, really.
But that's great, isn't it? Because sometimes you can be quite isolated, can't you, as a blind or partially sighted person? You can live in a part of the country where there just aren't many other people with a visual impairment. So it's quite nice to have that, you know, meet up with people, do something that you enjoy and make friends in the bargain.
Yeah, and that is the main and that's the key factor around all this. I remember when I went to St. Vincent's School as you did, Joe, and we were always playing, you know, sport and physical activity in school. Football was the main thing, cricket with Frank McFarlane, our old English teacher. And, you know, we, at break times, at lunchtime, after school, because we went to a boarding school, all we did was play some sort of sport. And we never really understood the landscape of what opportunity there were outside of our school, because it was never mentioned or never really introduced to us. Mm. And it was only when we started going to swimming galas at Worcester College and we started going to football tournaments for British Blind Sports at Aston Villa that we started to learn a little bit more about what was out there. But we still didn't really understand the full picture. Mm. And it was a gentleman called Anthony Turnham. You probably know Roy Turnham and Laura Turnham. They're both Paralympic athletes at the moment. And one, Laura does cycling. And Roy's an international footballer as well, blind footballer. And it was their dad, Anthony, who introduced myself and my twin brother, who went to St. Vincent's, to a team in Manchester called Northern Sports. And it's only because of that introduction that we've been so active in the visually impaired sports community. I think if it wasn't for that introduction, and that was the consequences as Anthony's wife working at our school, that the introduction was made, I don't think we'd have maybe been aware of everything that was out there. Mm. Or maybe that introduction would have come a lot later. And I have found over the many years that I've been involved in visually impaired sport, there's a different amount of people who get introduced to sport and physical activity opportunities for visually impaired people at different stages within their own journey. So whether they acquire a sight loss or they've always had it, people come to it either late or further on down the line and are not always introduced to it at the age of 16 or whatever age that they're able to get involved. And it's usually because of awareness and you know, the fact that they didn't know opportunities existed. And that's the biggest shame, really, the fact that they're missing out on opportunities. And because of my role now with Henshaws, I understand that there's a lot more youngsters out there who are going to mainstream education and they're being isolated from PE sessions. They're not getting the same opportunities as we did in school of trying sport, playing sport, getting involved in sport, physical activity. And they're missing out on the opportunities and they're not necessarily mixing in, you know, the visually impaired social circles either, or the visually impaired community. And it is, you know, it's a separate community from the mainstream community in some respects. And it's a, you know, it's a different circle of friends and, you know, and you learn different traits and everything else with regard being involved with those in those circles. And I do feel there's a lot of youngsters missing out on that opportunity, and hopefully by what we're doing and VI Talk are doing and other organizations like that, it's helping to raise awareness of the opportunities that do exist, so it at least gives people the choice that they can get involved. And if they don't want to, then, you know, we're still there in the background when another day comes when they do want to get involved. So
it's about letting people know and giving them choice, isn't it, at the end of the day as well. It's
exactly
encouragement.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. Fabulous. Thanks ever so much, George, for coming on.
Thank you.
giving us an update and letting us know about all that good stuff that's going on.
No, I really appreciate the opportunity, and you know, the more we keep banging the drum and advocating what opportunities exist, then hopefully the more people will have the opportunity to get involved. So thank you very much for allowing that.
You can email us at info@vitalk.co.uk. Our Twitter handle is vitalkpodcast. Our Facebook is vitalk. And our website is www.vitalk.co.uk.